guys are juggernauts. All right, welcome everybody to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott. We got TJ Oshie here, a guy who I played against for, I want to say, two decades, TJ. And I never talked to, but I've heard nothing but good things. So you finally texted me out of the blue, which never happens, because I've been hounding you for a few years, and you said I can come on. So thank you for joining the show.
Absolutely. Well, I know you've been asking me, and there was some weird stuff with Caps and going on podcasts last year. And honestly, I've been going through, like, and like when I say no to people, I'm just like, I'm kind of like a whatever guy. Like, whatever we're doing, I'm cool with. I don't even care if people like talk bad about me. I just, it doesn't like really faze me. But like, if I say no to someone, I feel bad about it. And so I was going through and I was just thinking like, gosh, who like have I kind of like ghosted a little bit? And then you right away you came up. Yeah. And so I shot you a text. I'm happy to be on.
Yeah. I noticed I was probably the fourth or fifth text, I'm guessing, because you went on a couple of the other ones. I'm like, what a jerk. I get it. Chicklets just signed on with Netflix. I get it. They're the juggernauts. And I'm just the little engine that could. So I understand. But, you know, I'm like a fine wine. This podcast is going to be terrific. So thank you for joining us. And I apologize for TJ. He's got a little tickle in his throat. So he might be coughing a little bit. It's okay. You got four kids. It happens.
Yeah. It's not eight, like you reminded me before we hit record. Yeah. But it is harder than two. So I think I have a leg up on most people. But yeah, little sickness going through the house. It's good for the kids. Build some immunity here.
It does. It builds some character too. But anyways, let's jump into it, because I know like Christmas is around the corner. You got some shopping to do. Do you do the Elf on the Shelf?
We do. We have a very lazy elf. Our elf sometimes doesn't move for a couple days.
Ah, man. I don't know how you do it. I did it for one kid and I was like, this sucks. Every night you got to be out there doing something. So good for you. You and your wife. You're better than me and
my
wife.
Well, it's all the wife. Yeah. And I just tell the kids when it doesn't move for a couple of days that they've been naughty. And
We do that with the tooth fairy. So we just had a couple teeth be lost. And my kid's like, is the tooth fairy going to come tonight? I'm like, I don't know. It's raining. The tooth fairy doesn't work in rain and it might snow. It's because there's days where we miss the tooth fairy kind of. And then, yeah, we make up for it. But it is funny how those things fall. Once you get two, three, four kids, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, I feel bad for number four especially. Although I think she's going to be the toughest.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, one gets all the attention. Two.
Yeah.
You know, you're still in it. Three and four. I don't know how five, six, seven, and eight go.
But oh man, I forget them. We'll leave somewhere and it's like, I literally have to do a roll call. I'm like, we got everybody in there? Because I got one of those big vans. I'm like, is everybody here? Because I don't hear all of them. But you got three girls.
Three girls.
Nice. Three girls. Cute. I have eight girls. Take that to the bank.
You have eight girls?
Let that sink in. Everybody who's listening is like, yes, we get it. You have kids and they're girls. They've heard it a million times. But yeah, it's just.
Well, I haven't heard it. That is, that's a lot of weddings.
They're going to be all nuns. I'm Catholic. So they're going to be all nuns living in the convent, just praying for dad. So it's going to be a beautiful thing. But yeah, lots of school, lots of weddings. That's why I got to work for ESPN. That's why I'm secretly having you on the show, so I can just weasel my way at ESPN and get the big bucks like you.
Let's go. Come now on. Let's go. We could use a character like you on there. We need you.
I know. I agree. I've been trying for years. I think I burned my bridges with the NHL with the whole All-Star game thing. I still haven't recovered from that with Gary. Gary hates me to the core. Like a perfect.
Well,
hatred.
He shouldn't. I mean, I think the ratings went way up because of that.
I know they went way up. I know they did. But it's you would think they would have me back for some kind of like TV thing at the All-Star event. They're probably going to have you there. Stupid TJ Oshie. Anyways, let's move on. I wanted to talk to you because a lot of things. You're a superstar. You get that. You played college. You went to University of North Dakota. The first question I would pose to you is you spent some of your time growing up in Minnesota. Why NoDak? Why there instead of the U of M? There was Minnesota Duluth. There was St. Cloud. There was a bunch of other Minnesota schools that I'm sure would have loved to have you. You're playing high school in Minnesota. You choose to go to NoDak, who was a juggernaut. Don't get me wrong. Ralph Engelstad Stadium, they invested all that money. I played there. Beautiful, beautiful setup there. Minnesota's not too bad. What was the reasoning there to go to play for the Fighting Sioux?
So I kind of mentioned, I'm just kind of a like I'm just kind of a go with the flow guy. And North Dakota was just the first people that asked.
You know what? The go with the flow thing translates to no spine, no backbone. Because you would think you would have some geographical allegiance, you know, Minnesota guy. Why not go to the Gophers? You just do what? So if Michigan Tech would have asked, if they would have said, hey, TJ, let's come up north to the Huskies, you would have said yes?
I mean, possibly.
You're such a liar.
It depends on what the stick room was. So I'm originally from the Seattle area.
Yes.
So I had no allegiance to the Gophers. And Waro, Minnesota is like, I'd say it's pretty much split down the middle, half the city, you know, city's 2,000 people.
Yeah.
Half the city is like Gopher fans, half the city's North Dakota fans.
Oh, okay.
I'd say maybe now it's maybe shifted, but we had Dave Christian that went to North Dakota from up there. And then my head coach in high school was Kerry Eads, the captain of North Dakota in 1980.
Yep. And he was a coach there, right?
He was, and then he coached me my sophomore and junior year. My senior year, he went to become an assistant coach at North Dakota.
Okay.
And I believe I committed before he went there, but it was like icing on the cake when he went for me. Mm-hmm. And I got super lucky the way I shifted into like going right to college. I was supposed to go to Sioux Falls. Brady Murray, who his dad, Andy Murray, was my first NHL coach, he left to sign with LA. Mm-hmm. I think earlier than expected. And so just like a spot opened up.
Oh, no kidding.
And I just kind of, I was like, yeah, let's go. Like they, honestly, they showed me the stick room. I was a stick nut.
Listen to you.
And so I saw the stick room and I was like, if I get free sticks, I'm coming.
So what was so good about it? Because every college program has a stick room. But like I said before, this big donor came into North Dakota and just donated a beautiful rink and all the stuff. They had like a water treadmill before anybody had a water treadmill. So what made the stick room so special?
I wasn't allowed to have like, we didn't have a lot of money. So like, you know, we had to like scam the sports stores. I get one synergy and you know, get a receipt and bring it back. Like at 29 days, like you're snapping that thing in half and going
this
back
is
to the store.
Not working for me.
And, that's literally it. My whole life, I walked in. There's nothing special about the stick room except for everyone has their own spot, and each player had 12 sticks.
Yeah,
and I couldn't imagine having 12 brand new synergies for that's myself. Crazy. Like,
yeah,
and so, that was kind of the reason.
That's it, and it didn't hurt that roster, because I remember playing against you. You were a freshman when I was a senior, and so I'd already battled against North Dakota forever. And your roster, your freshman year, it's an NHL roster. Like, it's Drew Stafford, who I played with, Travis Zajac, who broke my heart in the playoffs. There's Johnny Taves, who I played with, Ryan Duncan, Brian Lee. You had the big dude, Joe Finley, yourself. And there's more, Chorns, who was just an unbelievable pro. How does that feel when you go into that locker room and you're looking at, like, first rounders, number one overalls, and then you guys just walk through the season? It wasn't even close.
Yeah, well, I think for me, I never watched like hockey growing up. So like no one even explained like what being drafted meant. It meant, like, to me, it was like, oh yeah, if you decide to go play in the USHL, like you have to play for this team, right?
Yeah.
And my draft was 05, Crosby's draft, when they only invited like the top 10 to the draft. So I wasn't even watching when I got drafted. So like I just love playing sports, and it wasn't like just hockey. I was actually heartbroken when I got to Waro and they said I couldn't play on the basketball team too. And like I played football and then golf, got out of more school than baseball. So I switched to golf.
Basketball.
And yeah, I'm diehard basketball player.
Really? No kidding. Yeah. I would not have guessed. That's funny. I thought you'd be like a baseball shortstop type guy.
It was too, like, those younger years were too slow for me. Like when the other kids can throw the ball, I was like,
that's enough.
I'm out of here.
Okay. So you go to North Dakota and you're playing with all these superstars. Do you realize right away that you can keep up with them? Because it's the who's who. You guys were so hard to play against because you were so fast, so creative, so talented. And you're this 18-year-old kid going in with, by the way, Johnny Taves, who's 17. It wasn't fair for me playing against you, but how did you realize right away, like, this is where I belong?
No, I think, I think I was a little intimidated, like in our first couple skates with like the older guys. Cause you like, these guys were like, I mean, they were jacked. We were doing the exact same workouts as like the football team back then. It wasn't like you weren't doing hockey workouts.
That's college. It started Olympic workouts,
transitioning through my college career. Mm-hmm. But year one, like we're doing heavy, like power snatches, all that. Never worked out a day in my life. So these guys are like massive, like 8-packs, bice, like these huge guys. So I was intimidated by that. But I think when, and this is kind of for any sport, even like the pickup basketball game I played 2 weeks ago at my kid's Catholic school, like with the other dads.
Yeah.
Once like I'm in game, like I just have like this competitiveness in me that's just like, I don't care who you are. I'm going right after you. So I remember Matt Smaby. He's, I don't know, 6'6". He was like a junior. He might have been I think he was our captain that year. He's going around. We have 13 freshmen my freshman year. And he's going around running every single one of them.
That's what
and
you do.
No one's doing anything because he's 6'6", right? And I had learned through football growing up, I was like a small, slow running back to like just lower my shoulder.
Yeah.
And so Matt Smaby, I see him coming from behind the net, full speed. And I just lower my shoulder and he like does like a flip into the wall. He tried to fight me the rest of like, you know, the preseason workouts and skates and stuff. But it's just kind of that mentality where like, I don't know, I'm super competitive. So I didn't care. Like Johnny Taves is there. I want to be better than Johnny Taves. And honestly, in college, I maybe was. In NHL, absolutely not. But in the way the college game played was more to my style. And so it's just anytime I get on the ice, I just, you know, I try to be the best player and try to do what's right. And I don't think anyone I've ever met, you know, can like out-compete me. Maybe they can match me. Yeah. But and so when I got to college, it was just the same thing. Same thing when I got to the NHL. I just love that compete part of sports.
Yeah, you can tell. And we'll fast forward a little bit. I would love to stay on college the whole time because I think it's fascinating. I improved so much in college and I needed that, but it sounds like you didn't. But just the lifestyle and the workouts and the way things kind of evolve, it's so great. I don't have any boys, like we mentioned, and I'll probably mention 3 or 4 or 5 more times in the show. But I would push every boy hockey player to go into college versus the juniors. It's just such a better environment to be around, to grow. Did you get a degree? Probably not, because you were just cashing checks probably left and right.
I was not cashing checks. I was terrible at school. And honestly, if I didn't commit to North Dakota, if I didn't have Kerry Eads as my high school coach, I probably wouldn't have gotten out of high school. I was making up like 9th grade classes into my like my junior year.
We'll edit this part out.
Well, no, I don't mind. I was a terrible student. All I could think about was sports at school. I mean, all English class, all I did was like work on my signature in my notebook. You know what I mean? So like it was, but if it wasn't for Kerry Eads, he brought me like, it was like a month into the season. He like showed me, I had like all C's and D's. And he's like, if you don't have a C or better by the next game, you're not playing and you won't practice either. And I was like, oh my gosh. And he was scary. Wake like up, Paul, huge mustache. Like, you know, he was like the strength coach at the high school, you know, so he took weight training.
Just
and he's in there like shrugging like 100-pound dumbbells, you know, and so you're like, all right, this guy scares me. I'm going to start working on my studies. So, but yeah, I thought about going back to school. I actually tried during the lockout and I got booted from the class a month in for unpaid parking tickets from back when I was in college.
No way.
And so I paid for the class, everything, and I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm not doing it.
Because it was probably like a couple $100 unpaid parking tickets.
For sure. I had teammate that was like, oh yeah, if you park in the faculty, they're like, if you're not registered to the school, they can't like whatever. Yeah, so I had like $600 in tickets in my first semester. It was and a finally, sign. Like it went to like the police and then to my dad, and he was like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Oh, Mills told me that we didn't have to pay him."
That's pretty funny. That was it. And that was the last time you stepped foot on campus. You were done.
That was it.
That's actually, it was meant to be that way. And I think you're doing okay. You got a company and a million jobs, but I want to talk about what you said about, you know, being driven, being the hardest working guy in the room, because you get drafted by St. Louis. And I was in the league at that point, and the team I hated playing the most were the Blues because they were hard-nosed. Every single line played the same way, whether it was the first line or the fourth line. And you step into this team, it was a perfect match, TJ, because you look at the guys who they have, like a David Backes or a Perron. Yeah, they had Matthew Tkachuk and Alex Steen. All those guys play the same way you did. Did you feel that right away walking into that locker room? Because it's an intimidating group to walk into. Those are some high-profile guys. You're coming in as, what, a 21-year-old? How did you feel going into that locker room?
It was pretty much the same thing. So, like I mentioned, I'd never watched, an NHL game in my life.
You're so funny.
And so I didn't know – when I got there, I didn't know 90% of the guys on the team. I didn't know their names. I didn't know where they came from.
That's very funny.
Nothing. And it was more of the same. I went in. The only thing I was scared – honestly, I was scared of – or nervous about my first couple of years is some of these big hits. Everyone didn't shed their gloves right away back then. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big hit and now everyone freaks out. But there was, if you hit the wrong guy and he wanted to fight, I had never gotten in a fight before. I never played juniors. I played a couple games in Sioux Falls, but never gotten any fights there. So I've never dropped my gloves before. Yeah. So that was my only worry. But other than that, no, I just it was kind of part of my game. It worked out well. Like I said, we had Andy Murray. He was a very strict guy. Actually, all of my St. Louis coaches were very hard-nosed, didn't love a lot of skill. They wanted chip and chase.
Meat and potatoes.
Yeah. I remember Hitch always used to say, just give them the puck. They'll give it back. And I'm like, but I have it. I already have the puck. He didn't say superpower, but your advantage is you're so good at forechecking. I was but I already have it, Hitch. Can I please make a play?
To hear that mentality versus now, where it's you get the puck and you do whatever you can to just hold on to it versus, and that's how it was during that decade. You chip it in and you bury a guy and then you go low to high and throw it on net. That was how you scored goals. And you guys did it perfectly. You didn't have great playoff success because in the West was stacked. You had the Hawks to deal with. The Canucks were – all the Western Conference teams out in California were juggernauts. But you guys, that was your bread and butter. I think the highest scoring guy on your team, you were there for, 7 years, maybe had 40, 50 points. It wasn't a high-scoring team. It's an incredible culture that you won't duplicate today. What did you learn from that? Because you had to, I guess – take a little bit away to gain more for the team. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think you learn that. I think in those days I learned that the group as a whole can be just as effective as, one line that is crazy, crazy skilled offensive. Right.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
We were, even in those playoff series, we lost to LA for one of their cups, Chicago for one of their cups. Trying to think, Vancouver, when they went to the finals against Boston, I believe.
Yeah.
And every time we were right there, but we just couldn't score the second goal of the game or the third goal of the game.
Yeah.
But I would argue that and they wore us down too, but we wore those guys down.
Oh, yeah.
And if that somehow we find a way to get any of those games to a game seven, I think we have a better chance. But they just had, a little bit more skill and were able to score goals or a little bit better goaltending. But I think you just learn that to take care of your business and commit your effort to something that's bigger than your points. You're chipping that puck, not because you're giving up on scoring goals, but because it limits their opportunity to go back the other way and put your defense on their heels. So I don't know. It was good. I think sometimes it got over the top a little bit. When I got to Washington, I forgot how to play offense it took me a couple months where I even apologized to the coaches. I was playing with Backstrom and OV and I was I'm sorry, I should have like 30 goals by Christmas right now. Yeah. I was like, I haven't been in these positions and like had the puck in these areas of the ice for since college, basically.
You're so programmed to just get rid of it and chip and chase or do whatever.
You're like so worried that like if you turn it over, you're going to get benched. And so it made me almost not having fun at hockey anymore, but it was effective on those teams where everyone was committed to doing that.
Was it ever frustrating? Because you mentioned you lose to an LA or a Vancouver or Chicago who did have a couple superstars, like each of those teams, like they had the Sedin brothers and then obviously Dunks and Kaner and Taves and then an LA Kopitar and Doughty. And you guys had Pietrangelo and you got Tarasenko and yourself, but did you ever talk with the management and be like, why are we not doing that extra thing? You know, the Hawks go out and get Hossa, LA goes out and gets Robin Regier or whatever, or Vancouver goes out and gets such and such. Did you ever, because you're a Stanley Cup contending team, honestly, like you guys were so good. Did that ever frustrate you guys in that locker room?
I don't know if it ever frustrated us that we didn't go out and get anyone. We were so tight as a group that like a big trade, I don't think would have messed with the chemistry, but that would have like hurt. Like we were like super tight.
Yeah.
Well, we were together at all times. We had a lot of guys, especially after my first 2 years when Korea had retired. I think McDonald retired, Kachuk retired. We brought in guys and we were all within like, you were 22, young team. Like 29, 30. Mm-hmm. And we had a couple older guys, but they were like awesome with us. But I think the only time I really had a meeting with the GM was actually the summer I got traded. So I guess he didn't like what I said, but it was just along the lines of like, if we're going to play this hard nosed hockey, like we need all 20 guys. We can't, like, we're not good enough to have just 17. We need all 20 playing this way. I got traded like 2 weeks later, but
that's so funny.
No, I think it worked out for both sides. We both got a cup in the next 3-4 years. So
it didn't work out for them. Brouwer sucked when he went there. And I know Troy very well. He was garbage when he went to St. Louis. But anyways.
They got a cup in 19. So, I mean,
I know.
I think if they could do it the other way, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't putting up very good numbers when I got traded. So it took a while for me to not be mad about it. But
yeah. Well, because let's talk about that. I've been traded, but I'm not a TJ Oshie. You know what? I'm not an all-star. I'm not a 27-year-old in his prime. You obviously
we have the same amount of all-star games, by the way. So
now I think I have more all-star game MVPs. So TJ, I'm just saying.
You do.
No
you
big do. Deal. We'll talk about that a lot at the end. Just wait. That's a big part of this podcast. But so you get traded, obviously. Shocked, right? Because you're in your prime. You're 27. This is your best buds. How does that feel? We'll talk about going to Washington first, but you must have been pissed.
Yeah, I really felt like, and I don't feel like this now, but at the time, I felt like the organization, or at least the management, had decided that, like, and this is harsh, but this is just how I felt, that like I was the problem that we didn't get over the hump.
So that's what you think. You didn't hear anything. That's how you thought.
I didn't hear anything. They didn't tell me anything like that. They weren't they weren't rude. They didn't say anything that like I wasn't get the job done. That's just immediately if you're the guy that gets traded and all of your meetings are why are we not beating Chicago? Why are we not beating LA? Why are they winning cups when we can beat them in the regular season but not in the playoffs? Numbers honestly weren't like they weren't that great. And so that's just how it hit me. It was like, all right, you guys think that I'm the problem that you're not getting there. Better job of, you know, playing my position. And it went away when I the Caps and started playing with Ovi and Backy and felt like they just wanted me more kind of thing. But at the time, yeah, I it was hard. I had honestly an insane amount of support from the fan base in St. Louis. And I loved them so much and took as much time as I could, you know, to sign every autograph and take every picture, because they were so good to me. And so, you know, when you go from feeling like you're going to play your entire career for one organization, and like just putting in all that work and that sacrifice and then them being like, nah, you're not the guy. at the time, I took it really hard. I was extremely upset.
Yeah.
That's changed, and I know it's a business and things like that. But at the time, it was tough.
Well, there's no other way to take it because they didn't change anything else, and that's the normal, logical kind of decision mindset to have. But it is what it is, and you obviously, like you said, Washington was a great spot to go to. It's not like you're getting traded to Arizona and you're just stuck there for years and years. You're going to a Stanley Cup contender. But I want to get your take on the Leafs nowadays, because you talk about culture and changing things because it wasn't working, and you're a media guy now. You're ESPN, you're Showtime. What do you think about the Leafs? It's the truth, DJ. It's the truth. It's the truth. What do you think of the Leafs? Because they are a train wreck right now, like an absolute dumpster fire. They get rid of Mitch Marner. Very similar to your situation. Not having any playoff success. We need to make a change. They get rid of Mitch. St. Louis got rid of you. It's not going well in Toronto. Things aren't working. There's injuries. Do you see it? Give me the solution. What do they need to do in Toronto?
Honestly, I think it's at that point. A show like 5 days ago, and I was like, I remember going there, and like I feel like we never touched the puck. So I watched the Leafs a lot. Like I told you, like I'm not a big hockey guy. I watch, go on and give an honest opinion about stuff. I haven't covered the Leafs one time this year. If the players aren't holding themselves to a certain standard, then that's all I said on the entire show was the culture has to come from the top down. You have to believe in what your coach is saying. And if you don't, and especially the guys that on the third and fourth line and the guys that don't play very much, then all you need is one of those top guys to start letting one looks out for themselves. And I'm not saying that's what they're doing, but with how good some of those players, there should be more success there. I'm a super big culture guy, and I'll always go to the players first. I don't, depending on what the situation is, I don't love just firing a coach. All organizations, they've been through like four or five coaches in the last like 8 years. Clearly not the system. It's not the message. It's the message. I think almost everything always falls back on the players unless a coach doesn't take input from the players and understand how to get a message through to them, which I think is their job.
Well, TJ, you've kind of bridged the gap between old and new, and it's a players' league now. Like the players make so much money. They have so much influence on the GM and everything just because they make so much money. Do you see that kind of happening where the top end guys, and you can tell, and I'll say it, like Nylander is tuned out, Berube, Matthews, he's playing good, but it's not the same Austin Matthews we saw 2 or 3 years ago. Do you see them just kind of putting the writing on the table? Like, hey, we need a new coach, which I agree. It's not the coach. I think Berube's a great coach, but do you think players now have too much, I guess, control of what's going on for a team? It's turning into kind of basketball with like the LeBron James effect.
Yeah. I mean, I never felt that even with Ovi, like I just never felt that in Washington.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just the culture thing like we're talking about, but it's hard because there's so many players that I know that have had Chief and they all absolutely loved him. And so I don't go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like, did he change that much? He seems like a guy that's pretty set in how he sees a team operating. Gosh. Like, I would love to just spend a day in their locker room or a team party and see what it's like. You know, almost get a lot out of that. Or watch 2 days of practice and see how it is. Because you can, I think you can tell all in and who's not.
I just think it comes down to the guys in the locker room. And when you have elite players, it shouldn't be that hard for the guys on the third and fourth lines to get on board. And so it's got to start with them. It starts with work ethic. It starts with your commitment to winning. And I don't know if they have that there or not. If they're the problem, like I said, I haven't watched the Leafs only a handful of times this year, but I will always revert back to the players first unless the coach is completely oblivious to the message that needs to be sent.
I'll say what you don't want to. It is the players. Yeah, they're the problem. I think they suck. So it's definitely the culture there. You can just tell they don't enjoy being there. And I think you made a great point. If you could spend like 1 or 2 days, whether it's on the bus or on the plane, you can get a sense that culture, and you can pick it up right away if they have it or they don't. And just from, you know, outside looking in, they don't have it. But anyways, moving on. I want to touch on something because I played with Ryan Callahan. I've played with Patrick Kane. I've played against Phil Kessel. He attacked me one game, but I played with like these guys, Joe Pavelski, the Olympics in Sochi. You know, everybody lauds it as, oh, the TJ Oshie shootout, it was so great. I look at it as you being sort of selfish and just not giving people their chances, because it's not like you scored every goal. What was that like? Because that's insane. And I know you've probably talked about it at length because it's a big part of who you are. And it was the Olympics and it was in Russia and you were playing Russia and it was all these superstars and you're going against Datsyuk and Kovalchuk and Malkin and these guys and you're Bobrovsky. Just talk about it, because what I wanted to ask you, and a couple questions, but did you tell the coach not to pick me the second time? Because like I said, there's superstars on the team, TJ. Or were you like, it's me, it's my time?
No. So I don't know if you remember, but there was like, I don't know if it was supposed to be leaked or what it was, when they were selecting the team, it came out that, I forgot who it was, wanted, I think, was it Saad or wanted someone on the team, and I was in the mix, and David Poyle said, but Oshie has that shootout move.
Ah.
And so that came out. And so I had kind of known that they looked at me as that was my role on the team. I'd be I was a fourth liner. I would, you know, play that role, play physical, play penalty kill.
Yeah.
I hadn't gotten into my real power play stuff that I did in Washington yet, because I was still in St. Louis. Yep. And the power play just didn't work out that way. But yeah, once I got going, honestly, I was just nervous that if I missed, they would send someone else. And there was, I think one time I did miss, and I looked back at Dan Bylsma thinking like, are you not going to send Kaner?
Like, Kaner's on the bench and he's Patrick Kane.
On the bench.
Yeah.
Like, are you not going to send him? He just literally, I didn't say that, but just like, that was kind of my look. Like, are you going to send anyone else? And he literally, the coaches were like laughing and they were like, no, go again. I was like,
yeah,
okay.
Well, your two misses were your two best moves. Like, those 100%. Were the ones that were 100% goals and you just missed the net.
And that still hurts me to this day, because my best two moves,
yeah,
I didn't score on. One, I airmailed it over an empty net, literally completely empty net. And the other one, Bob hit it with the bottom of his blade.
Like, he stabbed you with it.
But yeah, it was also it would have been an empty net. He like stabbed it out of midair.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, that was probably some of the most fun I've had like in a hockey game.
Really?
Besides like the our Caps Cup run in 2018, like, that was like the most fun to me.
Well, because you mentioned earlier, you love the competitive, the competition, and it's one-on-one. And yeah. Bobrovsky, he was probably the best goalie in the world at that time. There's no fear, because listen, like you said, you could be the Ray Bork to Wayne Gretzky, how the Canadian Olympics were. If you would have missed and Datsyuk goes in and scores, you're the ass. So, like, you were just having fun. You loved it.
I loved it. I mean, I was that guy after every practice, like, shooting on the goalie and trying, like, all these other things. So, like, my move, like, the five-hole move, I've been doing that since high school.
Yeah, okay.
Like, it was on Mark Thiel every day after practice, and he would get so upset with me. He would, like, try to do different things, and I'd just keep doing it. And so, I would say I was as prepared at shootouts as anyone could possibly be, like, at that point. I'm not sure how much guys do it anymore, but I'd already had a good year that year in shootouts, and we worked it out every day in practice for the Olympics, not against Quickie, but against who was there? Millsy, so Ryan Miller,
yeah.
And and Schneider, and I was scoring on them pretty good in practice. And so I was feeling good, but if anyone goes back and watches, I know people throw it out like every year in like February mm-hmm. or whatever the anniversary is, but my first like two times down the ice, I literally lose the puck on my own because I hadn't been on the ice in so long.
Oh, no kidding.
It was a tight game. I'm on the fourth line, and we have four players on the fourth line because IIHF, you dress two extra players.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I didn't play I don't think I played a shift in overtime. If I did, it was like a quick 25, 30 seconds. And so I remember my first time going down, I was like, God, my stick feels really long.
That's very funny.
And I lost the puck my first time going down, like at the blue line. And then I lost it on another move where I had to shoot
it
five.
Right in front of the net, you lost it. I just watched it before we came on because I was just like, how many rounds did they go? It's amazing. So I obviously, shockingly, never was involved in a shootout, TJ. But what do you look for? You're coming in. Because we like you guys probably did in St. Louis and Washington, we would do it after the practice and whoever was the top three gets to go or whatever.
Yeah.
Are there cues or you just do whatever you want? Because you had two or three moves, you know, forehand, backhand, five hole. You had a lot to work with. What do you look for that the goalie's doing?
There's kind of like a, I guess if you go enough, there's like an oh shit moment, I'd say, where a goalie's like, they're just like frozen and they don't know what to do.
Okay.
They don't know
so
where
the goalie
going.
Has that moment.
The goalie has that
moment. Okay.
And so that moment for me is like, so on my five hole, I'll go in and I'll like start like I'm doing, like I'll just like flick my wrist a little bit. And the goalie for 1 second, like it's really fast, but they'll
lunge.
Lock in.
Yeah.
And then they'll start to come back out of it. And that's when I shoot. Cause like, if you're coming up, you can't go down.
Mm-hmm.
And, or it's like, I fake the shot, they set, and then I'm making like the backhand deke or whatever. And they're in desperation mode and sliding. So it's really looking at like, I usually have like an idea of what I want to do in mind, unless they do something weird. They come out really far or they stay really far back. But if they're pretty standard, there's just like this moment that I get right in the hash marks where I can feel like their desperation on like what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what I look for.
I hate you so much. He says it so like you say it so casually. For that, everybody listening, what he's saying is it's not you can't do it. Like I can't do it. Like it's not easy to just, you just do a flick and you can watch what they do, because as a player, you're supposed to be super panicked too. Like I'm having that oh shit moment as soon as I cross the blue line, like what am I doing?
And no, but you can't, it's honestly, it's just like a mentality of learning what to look for.
Yeah.
Right. It's that you're going in, and if they drop if they're a normal catching goalie, if they drop their left side knee, their glove side knee mm-hmm. a little bit, that means they're going into like the half butterfly, and all they can do is push off their blocker side foot, because that's the leg that's up towards their glove. And so all you have to, so then you see that knee flick down a little bit and you're like, oh, I'm deking fake glove to the backhand, because they won't be able to push back.
It's not that easy. Like it really isn't.
I think it's just repetition though. You know what I mean?
No,
I
do.
If you sat there and threw a piece of paper into the trash can 1,000 times, I'm sure by 1,000, you're going to get pretty good at judging how hard you got to throw it.
It's still an amazing skill to have, because it's not easy. You make it sound so easy, but it was, so you win it all. Did anybody give you a hard time in the locker room afterwards? Because I know Pavs, I know Kaner, they bust your chops a little bit. Wherever, like, oh, TJ, Mr. USA, congrats.
Not like at the time, it was really like a big whirlwind. Yeah. And I knew that like it wasn't a gold medal game, right? And so,
yep.
And I knew it was really early back home. And so I just imagined, you know, diehard fans would wake up for it, other people wouldn't. And it would be like in the paper later. And it was like, I got out and all of a sudden it was like media everywhere. Like I have to like drive to like NBC studios at the Olympics and go through like all the different, you know, studios and do like these And I was like, God, I didn't even like put gel in my hair. Like, I didn't think this is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm on these like shows and I'm like, oh God, I look like an idiot. But, and so I didn't really get to see the guys that much. And I had already gotten, super cool story. I don't want to take too much time, but, Rourke Denver, military guy, SEAL, longtime SEAL. He's written a bunch of books. I've read a couple of them. Awesome, awesome, awesome dude.
Okay.
He gave us his like hatchet, battle axe, like that he brought in battle with him every battle. And that was our player of the game.
Oh, wow.
And so I had gotten it the game before. And so that game, obviously I'm giving it to Quickie.
Yeah.
But it was like, we got it and like, we like hashed it like into the wall. Like,
oh,
you know,
no kidding.
The walls. They like just made
everything. Yeah.
And so literally the only time I got to see the team was just for that, took off our gear. And then I was gone the rest of the night. And then, but no one really gave me a hard time. They were, you know,
they're probably,
joking. I'm like, I was pretty shy guy, you know? Yeah. So I kind of, even at the time, like I said, I kind of felt bad that those other guys didn't get to go. Cause I'm sure a couple of them would have loved to.
It's an epic thing that it'll always be like, other than the Stanley Cup, like that's super cool. No one will ever replicate that. That's a one of a kind situation where you get to go that many times and have that impact in Russia versus Russia. That's the cool part, that it's just like, I got to get Bobrovsky and Datsyuk and Cole. Like it's crazy. I hate you.
Datsyuk's
so
my favorite player, by the way. Yeah. So when I saw, I was like going against him, you know, cause St. Louis, Detroit.
Oh yeah.
And we played like our top line back then against the other team's top line. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a checking line thing. So it was me, Backus, Steen against Datsyuk's line. And I mean, he just like terrorized us. And I was just always like,
that's cool.
Like his mind, the way his mind works on the ice, I just always like really, really respected him. And so the fact that I was going up against him in the shootout, I was like, all right, this is my chance to get him. Like this.
Well, because you were smiling. And I noticed that not a lot of guys would smile in that situation. So you really did enjoy it. Like you're a psychopath.
I'm telling you, it was like some of the most fun.
That's so
like
cool.
For like my whole life, like loved doing it. And then to do it like on that stage, it was just like the coolest. People throw around word like honor a bunch, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm a big military, like US military guy. And so like for a hockey player, that's as big as it gets, right? Mm-hmm. Wearing USA on your jersey,
yeah.
You know, they get to wear it on their camo. But, and so it was like, oh, I get to represent like the country. Like, and this is like what I love doing. And we did a bunch of pre-scouts for shootouts and stuff. So I already feel like I had an idea of what Bob was going to do. And, but yeah, I had so much fun. Like honestly, sometimes when you win in the shootout, like you almost like, especially the year before I shot 5 times in world championships and you're almost like, it's kind of like the end of a golf round. Like you're mad that it ended.
You enjoy it so much.
You want to just keep going.
Yeah. So who's got the advantage? I'm sorry to take so much time on this. Does the goalie have the advantage the more time you go? Because you would think he gets your tendencies and your cues, but you have so many moves. Like, did you see Bob cheating by the 4th time you're coming down the ice?
The first time I ever decided to start going down the ice the exact same way was mid-shootout.
No,
I had done that a couple times, but sometimes I go straight down.
Yeah.
And so that's like the first thing that went through my mind was I'm just going to come down the exact same way, up the exact same way. And because I already went 5-hole on him, I'll see like what he does after this. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit more of a mind game than it is like a skill game. And I just love that aspect. Like my favorite players are always the ones that are the smartest on the ice. Like, I love guys that score. Ovi will get my utmost respect. Greatest goal scorer of all time. But like Nick Backstrom, the way his mind works on the ice.
Yeah.
I just like appreciate guys like that and like always wished that I had that calm, you know, presence of mind with the puck to like just look at everyone on the ice.
Like Kucherov, just to have that patience to
I think if you didn't play, like to the average fan, it just looks like they make nice plays. But there, I mean, the game, like to be able to skate down the ice and see everything that's going on, like 1, 2, 3 layers away from you.
Yeah.
And then make a play through those layers, like I just love that.
It is easy to watch it on TV and go, oh yeah, look at all the time and space he has. Like it's there. Why don't you just, but in game, it's impossible to have that kind of wherewithal. Yeah. Kucherov and Backstrom are, like just head and shoulders. It's fun to watch him play. But yeah, we'll move on. You go to Washington and you win the cup. And could you tell right away the difference? And you mentioned just the type of game you're playing. You're going from Hitchcock. You're going to a Washington team that's just run and gun. Like, it's just like, let's go out and have some fun. Not like take advantage and just give way, because you still have Barry Trotz, who's a very good defensive-minded coach. But could you tell going into that situation, like, this is a cup team. Like, they have the superstars. They got the goalie. They got the defense. It's a little bit different than St. Louis.
Yeah, I think we were – so we were President's Trophies my first 2 years there in 15-16, 16-17. Mm-hmm. And then the next year, everyone was talking about how, like, Ovi's window is closed.
Yep.
And we traded away – or Justin Williams signed in Carolina. We got rid of Olsen. We got rid of Marcus Johansson, who, by the way, JoJo, he's one of those cerebral players that
I absolutely love.
And so we almost kind of had a little bit of a chip on our shoulder. But the one thing I loved about Trotsky was we had an offensive system in place, like where we wanted guys to be in certain situations when the puck was in question. But defensively, he demanded that everyone play our system to a T.
Huh.
And it wasn't until probably February 2018 that he went like berserk on us in Colorado in between like periods. Or maybe it might have been after the game. And he was basically like, I think it was like the last year of his deal possibly. And I think he was like, if you do not play to a certain standard defensively, if you do not stop on off the back check as a winger, you will not play. Hmm. And it was like, he didn't say anything about turnovers, none of that stuff. He's like, defensively, if you don't play this way, if you don't block shots, you will not play. He's like, I don't care anymore. I've had enough. And it like, it hit the guys. Right. Yeah. And so like we got into playoffs and it was, there was no like playoff slogan. There was no like our year, or, like any of that stuff. It was like, we just kept, we, whatever the Stanley Cup, you know, playoff gear was, we got it. Most guys didn't even wear it. We just wore whatever we had.
Yeah.
And it was like all business. We're going to play this way and we're going to win or lose this way, because, you know, going run and gun with 80-90% buy-in against Pittsburgh wasn't working. They won both years previous. And that was really it. And that's why it was so fun, because we came together so much as a group that, yes, we had a good power play. Holtz was unbelievable. He didn't even start playoffs, but after the two games, he played the rest of the way. He was phenomenal. But it was like Ovi blocking shots, Kuzi back-checking, you know, going as fast back to our net as he does with the puck towards their net.
Yeah.
It was, and, you know, me and Backy were kind of, we're always, you know, bought in and, you know, kind of played that way. But it was like everyone, no matter who you were, did it. And we got a little lucky too. We got some, you know, lucky bounces, lucky calls, pucks off of our posts that didn't go in that years prior did. But it, there was this absolute buy-in that we were just going to play this way. And by the end of seven games, we would win. And that just never wavered. And it was like a cool thing where like when we won and like you're hugging guys after, like it didn't feel like we were just the best team in the league. It actually didn't feel like that at all. If, or the, you know, on paper, or the most skilled, or it just felt like we were the best team and teammates in the league for that playoff series, that playoff run. And it just made it so special.
And it's not, yeah, I was just looking at your team. You didn't really do anything at the deadline either. So you had this team the whole season. There was a couple minor things you got rid of. Speaking of Charney, you got rid of Charns, but unfortunately for him.
That was unfortunate. I'm pretty sure they were sending him down just to make a trade, and he was coming back up, and freaking Columbus picked him up. Oh, man, that hurt so bad. And then he ended up playing against us in the first round in, like, game four and five or three and four or something.
One of the best guys ever. So he doesn't get a ring, but it's just here. It's just that group. So it just, I guess, is a testament to they did believe in you, which is not normal because of the previous history that you had. Like you said, losing to Pittsburgh the last few years and watching these other teams win the cup. So that's got to feel good. But just, I don't know. I don't want to stay on this too long, but you played with Ovechkin. You played with Backstrom. You played with Kuznetsov. Like, Ovi's the greatest goal scorer ever. Just talk about that. I don't know, because it's such a stupid question, but you got to play with the greatest goal scorer ever. How cool was that to watch him do his thing and then to win the Stanley Cup and kind of rip that monkey off his back?
Yeah. honestly, he's like one of a kind. Yeah. Like, just like coolest dudes you could ever play with. And you never know by that in the locker room, like how goofy he is, how much he's like involved with like the other guys. He's a superstar. Like, you don't watch documentaries about, you know, mm-hmm. The Last Dance, how Michael was like, you know, freaking here. And if you weren't there, he would like get on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kobe wasn't like that at all. He was like very like welcoming and like let everyone be exactly who they were. But I will say, like, there was a switch that him and Cousy flipped in those playoffs that got us to the next level. I mean, there's so many like highlights, like looking back when you watch through of Obi, like going down on one knee and like blocking shots. And, you know, Cousy, I mean, when the puck was on his stick, that like he was skating, like you couldn't touch him.
Yeah.
You just couldn't touch him.
You mentioned it earlier. When the top guys do it, everybody buys in. So it must have felt good for like you and Wilson and all these guys to see like, oh shit, Ovi's blocking, like Ovi's going down, diving for a shot. Like that, you must have been like, okay, this is different.
Yeah. Oh yeah. When you see that buy-in of the little things, the things that won't get pointed out on the broadcast. Mm-hmm. As a teammate, when you see that, you're like, if he's doing it, I have to, because I can't score 60 goals. You know, I can't, you know, change a game with my shot. I can only change it by doing the little things right and hoping it leads to team success. Yeah. And so when you see him doing that, when you see Cousy doing that, I mean, I can't tell you how many times Cousy just comes flying back, and because he can skate like the wind, it's like he's skating on air. Like he doesn't dig into the ice somehow. Come back and he just breaks up so many plays, and you're like, guys, we're doing this. Like,
that's cool.
This is going to happen. And we talked about in the locker room, we're like, if we just keep doing this, no matter what, and our bench, I can't believe how crazy our bench was. Anytime like someone scored or we got a penalty against us, our bench didn't react ever. It was,
you were all business.
Honestly, it was like we were just completely locked in, but we were having a ton of fun, like at the same time.
Yeah,
you know, in the hotel playing video games. I got a Mario, with like all the Mario Kart guys got Mario Kart tattoos after we won. So it was a group like a group that came together like I've never seen.
Well, you talk culture. That's what it is. And you build that culture, and that's why you build it, so you can have success like that. So I don't want to keep it too much longer, but you mentioned you working on your shootouts. Did you see Ovi working on that shot? Because listen, I've stepped in front of that shot before, and it's the worst thing ever. It's like him and Shea Weber were the two guys. I'm like, this is going to suck super bad.
Yeah.
Was it natural for him, or would he be out there, you know, before and after just teeing up one-timers?
So I got traded there. I think he was like 10 years into the league. So I'm not sure what his work was before, but he would stop in, you know, at the end of practice and take like 10 one-timers and then get off the ice. That's it. So not like you'd think. There's just no one, like when you're playing with him, there's just no one that is one that loves scoring as much as he does, but there's no one that thinks they're going to score as much as he does.
Oh, like really?
Dude, he goes into every shift. I swear to God, like he thinks every shift that he's going to score a goal.
Yeah.
And he convinces himself, it's the same way when we play cards. Like he convinces himself that he's going to get the best hand every deal.
That's why he goes broke at playing cards.
And he gets the best hands. Like he just like, it's unbelievable. It really is. But he's the most natural goal scorer, and he can score in like any way. And I know he doesn't score like he does when he was younger, when he weaves through all five guys anymore. But like, if he gets in those positions, his ability to know where to shoot the puck, sometimes without even looking. And like, I think I've never asked him about it, but I feel like in his mind, he must know or have an idea of what the goalie's doing, because he scores some crazy goals where he's like, he doesn't look at the net, it's like way behind him.
Well, that's what I mean, like, the repetition. So he might, in my mind, I'm like, oh, he must have this shot because, he doesn't look at the net and it goes top shelf or short side, but it's just he knows. That's funny.
He's just an unbelievable human being.
Well, and the fact that like he's gone from being a dangle guy and, you know, super speed to now he's like fat and slow and he's still putting in 30, 40 goals. So he's progressing. You look at a guy like Stammer, hasn't really progressed you know, he went from scoring 60, now it's 20 or 30. Ovi says he's managed to do that throughout his career. So it's just, yeah, he's a unit, that guy. Like, he really is something special.
There's no one else. There's no better, like, natural goal scorer than him. It's just not going to – it won't leave him. No matter how much he's skating or he's not skating, if he gets the puck in those areas, he will score goals.
It reminds me of Patrick Kane in the shootout. Like, he's just – those two guys were so unstoppable. But it's a shame we didn't see Patrick in Sochi. But anyways, TJ, on that note – sorry.
He got a breakaway in overtime, I think.
And he missed. So that – maybe that's why.
Maybe it is.
I'm such a jerk.
Sure,
I'm sorry.
I thought for sure he was in the top three. Like, I don't see how you don't put him in there.
I can't imagine. I sat there and watched it for 30 minutes. I'm like, how are you not going back to that bench looking at Bilsma going, like, come on, like, Kaner, like, he's there. Pavelski's got a, like, he's a laser shot. But
I was having too much fun, my friend.
It's so cool. It's too much fun now, but I got to let you go. I know you got to do Christmas shopping. Who knows what you got to do next? Off to ESPN, off to War Road. Where can I get these hats? Who do I send a check to get a hat from TJ Oshie?
Well, I think you've entered the friend zone, so maybe I can just, free 99 for you.
I'm not going to take you up on that.
Going. Christmas is a busy time, but yeah, it's been a fun little side project. It's actually grown a lot more than I thought.
Oh, so. It's a great product. You do the neck guards, you do the apparel. Where does everybody find that? Just what do we Google?
I mean, yeah, it's, you would think like the town of War Road is just like so small that warroad.com was available.
They didn't have that? Oh my goodness. No. That's very funny.
So, I mean, honestly, I felt bad like taking it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, but it was available and we're like, well, you know, if you want to grow the business. But yeah, so it's just warroad.com. And we're in Canada and US now. So
nice.
It's been fun, you know. I originally was kind of this whole base layer neck guard thing. I really just wanted to protect kids, and it was my partners that wanted to do it for adults too. And just with timing and all the
timing is perfect right now, yeah.
Yeah. So we started developing back in 2021. So before, like, you know,
All the deaths and everything, whatever.
A young boy in Connecticut that passed, mm-hmm. and I saw it in the news, and immediately I was like, net guards for kids.
Yeah.
On the shirt that I basically made, like, for myself. I was like, it has to be something that I want to wear.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I want them to get the exact same shirt that I wear so that kids can have it. It's been good. Hope people like it, you know.
Yeah, they love it.
A lot of sweat into it, so.
Well, good for you, man. You're making a difference. So I'm super happy. I'm glad you reached out to me and just came on the show, because I really do appreciate it. You're one of the good ones. My shows usually go 25 minutes because I get so bored talking to the guy.
Well, I tend to ramble on, so I think it's my fault. I ramble quite a bit.
No, you ramble on. Your stories are fantastic, and I could go another hour. But again, I have 8 daughters. Did you know that? And I gotta go. We gotta go deal with
that. Yeah, you gotta go. You gotta go put down some deposits for some weddings, or at least
tell me about it. I need to get on the road or do something. Oh my gosh! You at ESPN. What's that?
So we'll get you at ESPN. We could use you. I have zero pull anywhere, but I'm the rookie.
See, you're making the mistake of doing these and making these promises. I'm gonna ping you as soon as this call's over. Get me some free hats. Get me an interview at ESPN, and then you have just barked up the wrong tree with me, because I'm the most annoying guy ever when it comes to that stuff.
Well, at least your chair won't have to be elevated as high as mine is behind the desk. I'm just a little guy.
You're
so
6 foot.
No. Oh, yeah. Like 5'10", 3/4".
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'm not even close to 6.
And you played at what, 205, 210?
No, like 190.
190? That's a thick boy there. That's real thick.
Getting thicker now.
Yeah, well, it happens. I've gained a few, but not too much. I fast, so I don't eat breakfast or lunch.
Oh, there you go. I've done that a couple. It feels good. Yeah. Honestly, my I think if I just didn't, I'm a like bedtime snacker.
It'll get you.
So
yeah.
I just didn't eat after dinner. I think it'd be fine.
100%.
You know, I'm not like a, I don't like go out for like a couple beers. I don't have like a glass of wine at home and like, you know, get the kids and all the mayhem and stuff. So if I just stop like snacking, and I don't even buy myself snacks, I eat the kids' snacks in bed.
It's a slippery slope. You look over, TJ's got some gummies in his bed. Go to bed. Yeah. That's fine.
I got it all. Yeah, got it all in there. My wife's like, you're a pig.
You look at when you got a face like, if you're not listening on YouTube, he's a handsome guy. He can get away with a lot. Yeah, so it's very annoying. Like, he's got the look.
Here we
go. Typical hockey. My girls are into hockey here now, so I'm not going to show them this video because they'll be like, TJ Oshie, Dad, why are you losing your hair? Why is it gray? Like, shut up. Go to bed.
I just said yesterday, I was like, I got to cut this thing and turn into a real man here one of these days.
It's time to grow up, Peter Pan. Maybe one of these days.
It is.
All right, TJ, man. Thanks for joining us. This is a blast. I'll talk to you offline and really annoy you. But I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Everybody go to warworld.com, get some gear, and see you next time, TJ. Thanks, buddy.
I appreciate you, brother. This has been awesome.
Thanks, man.